Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
And good morning, I'm Dave Kubikian.
Good morning, I'm Dan Glasser.
You there, Dan? Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. How you doing?
I'm very well. Dan and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and some combination of us attorneys are here every weekend with you, talking estate planning, talking Medicaid planning. Every now and then, we're talking about something called real estate. We have locations in Albany, Saratoga Springs, down in Kingston, and in the middle in Clifton Park, which is where you'll find Dan Glasser right now. Because Dan, if I understand it, right now you are in Clifton Park, in the Clifton Park office.
I am. I'm loving it.
It's very quiet. I'm in the Albany office, and I can get all my steps in here. I can walk around mask-free. It's kind of nice. Not going to lie.
Same. Thank you for not lying.
So, Dan, what's going on? It's springtime. I hear the real estate market is on fire because there's not a lot of inventory, if I heard correctly.
You did hear that correctly.
What's going on in your world? Yeah, what's going on?
There's a lot going on in my world. So, as you mentioned, the real estate market is on fire. No one wants to put it out. And we're still seeing multiple offers on properties. Some of these properties are going for $30,000 or $40,000 over asking.
Wow.
So if it's a great time to sell. So if we have any listeners out there that are thinking about putting their house up for sale, they're kind of on the fence, I think I should push you over and say, just do it. Like,
well,
Nike, just do it.
Well, Dan, you brought up something without knowing it, because I failed to tell people that they actually can call you or call me, and if they have questions about, you know, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, as well as real estate, and they can call the radio station 518-476-5900. If they think it's a little personal, they don't want to talk about their real estate dealings on the phone, on the radio, they can call the office at 518-465-7581 and schedule a time to talk with you or myself or Debbie or Jay Marie when it comes to estate planning and elder law. You know, the thing I think, Dan, is that if you're going to sell a property and get all these bids and get more than you're asking for, which is obviously wonderful, you need somewhere to go, don't you?
That is true, Dave.
Theoretically.
What I found is a lot of people are the younger folk, they're staying with their parents for the time being. So they're taking advantage of the seller's market. They're going to make a lot of money on their sale. And then when things kind of turn into more of a buyer's market, they'll spend that money on a new home. Because as I think you're alluding to, if you sell, you're going to make a lot of money, but then you turn around and you'll likely spend the same amount of money on a newer home.
Correct.
And we're also seeing a lot of new construction of contracts come in. And, you know, these aren't cheap as well. A lot of the materials have gone up due to demand. So there are some builders that I heard last week that they are pausing construction because the materials keep going up and up. And the real estate, I mean, the new construction contract starts and then the house isn't built or complete until like 6-8 months later. So by the time they're framing, you know, it's probably 3 months after the contract is signed, you know, their expenses have already gone up and they might be losing some money. Crazy times.
I understand. You know, where I always like when you're on the radio with myself, I like to talk about where our worlds collide. And it happens to be certain kinds of sellers or certain kinds of buyers. Obviously, when we have estates or trusts that are selling property, right, the seller is the executor. The seller is the trustee of the trust. on behalf of the trust, and they're going to deal with you. And a little later on, I'd like to talk about what that means in terms of process, because so often people think an estate, you know, probate, or having a trust, trust is complicated. And my life isn't that complicated. I don't think I need a trust, or it's something I'm going to rule out because of my perceived complications of what a trust means. As it turns out, on the real estate side of it, it's quite a normal transaction that we'll get to. But I think where there's a lot of our clients who are maybe thinking about downsizing, right, they may take advantage of a seller's market and downsize to a smaller home or even an apartment, a community where there's like-aged people. And so that way they're able to kind of take advantage of the seller's market, lock in that profit without a future purchase in a seller's market as well.
Very true. And if I could back up, thank you for the kind words. I really enjoy being on the air with you as well.
Did I say any kind words? I don't recall.
It was about 60 seconds ago.
I'm your favorite person to be on the air with. I meant it, of course.
Thank you. But that's correct. I mean, there are a lot of apartment complexes going up all over the region, maintenance-free townhouses as well. So there's an option.
So, Dan, we're going to, I know people are going to be calling in at some point, 518-476-5900, and I know we're going to talk about our webinars, and there's a future webinar we'll be doing about real estate that I know you're in the works on.
There is.
But let's talk about trust. Let's talk about estates. Let's talk about how property can move within either of those two things. And I'd like to start with a trust, because so many of our clients do have trust, and when people go to our webinars, they're coming because they are curious about a trust and whether it's a good fit for them, and so on. So I create a trust during my life, the Dave Trust, and maybe it's revocable, maybe it's a Medicaid trust, which is geared towards protecting that asset and the equity I have in the house for the future, right, in case I have certain kinds of long-term care needs down the road. So I put the house in the trust. I don't actually pick up the house. I'm not that strong. I'm not going to physically put it in the trust. Yeah, I try. We're going to retitle the deed. It's going to be a deed from me, the person, to my trustee as trustee of my trust. So it's a pretty common deed that we do here. We call it, it's a type of quit claim deed. It's not with all the bells and whistles that other deeds may have if it's a third party buying a piece of property. But the idea is the new owner is the trust, and within the trust document that we set up, whether it was revocable or the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, there's going to be pages and pages of language, Dan, that says, I, Dave, personally, am responsible for all the expenses of the house. If there's a mortgage, I'm still paying it. Real estate taxes, school taxes, insurance, repairs, it's all on me. I also get something called exclusive use and occupancy of the property. So if I didn't tell you how the deed is titled, and I just told you what my responsibilities are and what I get to do in my own home, you would say, well, it sounds like you own a home. And you'd be basically right, because I have a legal life use of the home. How am I doing so far?
You're doing great. Keep going, please.
Okay. I'm going to keep going here. So that's fantastic. And this house is going to sit in the trust. Life is going to be no different than it was the day before I did this. Okay. I'm paying all the bills. Every now and then there's going to be a tax bill that gets delivered to my house. And maybe I'll see someone else's name on that tax bill. Don't be alarmed, because probably it's just the name of your trustee and the tax bill didn't include the whole, my daughter as trustee of my trust, because that's a rather long name when we write it out. So it's still your responsibility to pay the taxes and so on and so forth. Now, either one day I pass away, Dan, when I pass away, or I decide this house ain't the house for me, and I'm going to want to get rid of that house. I'm going to want to sell that house. And this is where a lot of confusion starts, because so many people think that they have to stay in their house the rest of their lives because they put it in the trust. They don't own their house anymore. thus they need to stay in it. They don't have the ability to just buy and sell like you do right now. They couldn't be more wrong. So let me turn it to you, Dan. How frequently are you dealing with sellers who are estates or sellers who are trusts?
Quite often. We have a healthy stack of, I actually have a separate stack in the office for trusts and estate files. And the process of selling that property isn't that much different from, you know, Dan and Taylor selling their house. You know, the title company involved will ask for a copy of the trust. That's standard. They want to make sure that the trust has the power to sell it. But the contract itself is the same. The process is near identical, and it's, I don't want to say anything is easy, because it's not, but it's no more complicated than, you know, a standard transaction. So there's nothing to be afraid of. And of course, if the client has any questions, we're here to help and guide them.
So Dan, the seller obviously is going to be the trust. It'll be, you know, through someone who can sign for the trust. That person's called the trustee. They're an authorized signatory of the trust. So when you're talking about who your client is in that transaction, it is the trust, and your contact person could be the trustee, but really it could be me, right? I set up the trust, and, you know, the ins and outs of what the trust says, what it means for me to have this, you know, exclusive use and occupancy of the property, what it means for me to be solely responsible for the bills, this legal life use also means that you, trustee, whoever you are, cannot just sell this house, right? I still call all the shots because I am everything for this property. I'm paying everything. I'm living there. It just happens to be titled in the trust. So why would you do this? It seems easy to not do this, right? It seems easier to not have this explanation. And there's two main reasons why people put property into trust. Sometimes three, if they have a lot of different kinds of real estate and they have, you know, rental properties. So we'll get to the rental properties in a second. But in general, I know I'm going to die one day, Dan. I know this may be a shock to you. I may be sad about it, but it's going to happen. I have bad news for you as well. I don't know if you knew this. I'll just tell you off air, though. But when that time comes, my will is going to govern what happens to my home unless something else is in play. Right now, if I died, my wife is on the deed with me. Immediately, snap of a finger, that house belongs to her. It's called passing by operation of law because the house is titled that way. If you called Isabel up, Dan, and you said Dave died during one of the radio programs again, and she said, oh, my goodness, and she fainted and died herself, now her estate is going to be the owner of the property. So putting things in a trust, particularly a piece of property, means that when the owners of the property pass away, or the life owners of the property, rather, there is no need to look at the will. There's no need for something called probate because I didn't own the house when I died. Isabel didn't own the house when she died. It was in our trust, which theoretically survives us. It's a separate entity. So big reason to put a piece of property in trust is to avoid probate. Still get the money the house represents, still leave the house to whoever you want to, but not go through the court process of probate to get there. So let me turn it to you, Dan. You find out that my wife and I just passed away, and my children are somehow older and mature, and they want to sell this house immediately. You're going to tell them they can't sell the house immediately after our death if we're going through probate, right? You're going to have to wait for that process.
I would say that, yes. Yeah, I mean, title, we've got to cross all T's, dot all I's as far as the title. Title company is going to want proof of death, so we, you know, I'll be reaching out to your kids to request death certificates. And, of course, I'll cry upon the receipt of them. But, there's steps that need to take place before you can just, you know, sell a house. It's not snap your fingers and it's done.
Well, Dan, not just that. The my kids wouldn't have the authority to do anything if we're talking about a probate because just because I have a will doesn't mean anything. We actually need that will to be admitted for probate. We need my son and daughter, whoever I name as executor, to officially be appointed executor right. by the state of New York. So that way they have the authority at a closing to then sign. I mean, you know, you represent lots of buyers. When a buyer is buying something, they have to make sure that the seller owns it and the seller has the authority to sell it. And so, right. you know, we're going to talk about how it works in a trust for a second. But when it comes to estates, you know, I know the title companies and who you represent, they're going to want to know, for example, hey, are there estate taxes due on this estate? Is there some sort of encumbrance on this property? Do we need a payoff letter and a wire to be sent to the lender who is the current lender on this piece of property? There's a lot going on there. When we're talking about an estate, there's a couple more things going on, right?
Right. Yeah, so we would need, as you pointed out, letters, testamentary, letters of administration, depending on the, you know, the estate or the if there's a will. And that I have a file going on right now. It's crazy that you said that. I think you must know. The client is calling quite often and wants to sell immediately, and we can't because our hands are tied because we're waiting on paperwork from court. And I tell clients all the time, I'm not Superman. I have Superman cufflinks, but I can't control everything. And, you know, no one can. So sometimes you just have to wait.
And so that's where, you know, there's an expression in life, time is money. And you know, it's a nice expression, and sure, I guess it's true. There are a couple areas that we deal with where it's absolutely true, right? When we're trying to get someone qualified for Medicaid an extra month earlier, right, and our efforts are able to save private paying a nursing home 1 month, that might be that month, that time, was a $15,000 moment of time, right? We just saved money because of what we did. If someone passes away, this happens all the time, unfortunately, in the fall, right? A loved one passes away in January. If we have to find the will and then we have to serve people with the will and go through this probate process, and it's going to take a couple months before we have someone actually able to engage a broker, someone able to sign a deed because you have it all queued up for them, Dan. If we all of a sudden are in January in upstate New York, guess what's not selling until April in upstate New York, right? It's absent this kind of market, we're stuck with that house. We're stuck with the carrying costs, the taxes, the oil, the national grid. You can't have pipes freeze, right? So there's these ongoing expenses, and there's a premium to trying to avoid probate. It's not because there's going to be some big will fight that happens in the movies and in soap operas. I mean, sure, it's possible. We do, you know, our fair share of those. But the problem with this whole probate thing is, even when it's easy, it's a pain in the you know what.
I do know. I'm thinking that our callers or our listeners are just really taking this all in, and they don't want to interrupt us. But
I can hear them writing at home, actually. I can hear the pen on the pad. So
you have that gift, too.
This is what it's for. Yes, yes. So, Dan, let's shift focus. And the callers will come. I'm not worried about that. Let's shift focus to now a trust, because trusts are now, we don't have to wait to die. We don't have to be so depressing here. Right? I just don't want to live in my house anymore. I have a trust. I'm protecting the value that the property represents. Right? I went to one of the webinars, and I came in for a free consult, and I said, you know what, the trust is right for me. I talked to some friends, I talked to my kids. All right. Now 10 years go by, right? I've had this piece of property in my trust for 10 years. It's too big, too many stairs. I'm getting old. I can't do it, right? This, we're not like losing out on the trust because our client wants to now sell their piece of property, right? They're going to talk to you. They're going to talk to brokers. The client, the creator of the trust, we call them the settlor or the grantor, they're calling all the shots. They're the ones with this legal life use, okay? So they're going to say, you know what, it was time to sell. I hear it's a great market. Maybe we're going to downsize. Maybe we're going to move into an apartment, what have you. They're going to contact you, contact the broker, get the thing going. now you're engaged, you're talking to your counterpart who's representing a buyer, and it's a normal real estate transaction on your end. Okay. Right. The signer at the closing is not going to be the settlor of the trust, although they may need to sign off on the fact they agree that they are selling this property. Remember, they have a life use on the property, and if I'm a buyer, I don't want to buy a house, open up the garage door and find, you know, all the settler stuff still there, and him saying, yeah, I have a life use here, don't you know? Right, so the buyer's going to want to make sure all that's taken care of. But the proceeds of at the closing, right, absent some other documentation we've prepared, the proceeds go to the trust because the trust was the owner of the property. Now, people may say, well, wait a minute, hold on a second. I want to get the proceeds of the house. Yes, it's all for you. It's all for your benefit. The trust is all for your benefit. You will enjoy the money in your trust. You can remove, partially revoke your trust to pull out whatever you want. For all of a sudden moving to a ritzy 55-plus community or something like that. Dan, you're getting pretty close to 55-plus, right?
I'm almost there.
So, you know, maybe one day. You have access to that money. You could use that money, but we want to protect that money first and foremost, right? Why did we create that trust, especially that Medicaid trust? It was to protect the value of your home. So if you sell your home one day, we want that value that came from the home to still be protected. So that money will actually be payable to your trust as opposed to payable to the seller, the settler, right, if it was me as an individual. And all's well, right? Money continues to be protected. I'm on the lookout for my new home or my new community that I want to live in. I'll have access to all the money, and there you go. It's pretty straightforward.
It is. That was beautiful. Well put.
Thank you, Dan.
So Dan, Dave, we can put our first caller on right now. It's Jane in Kingston.
Hey, Jane in Kingston. How are you?
Oh, good. Wait a minute. Try and get the radio down. I have a question about the community Medicaid, where you have, if your income's above Medicaid, you know, you have to get, like, the pool trust to become, you know, eligible. But I have seen something on the news sometime this week about them changing the type of Medicare you would have if you had the community Medicaid. I don't remember to what type, but it wouldn't be like the standard Medicare. It would be one of the other alternatives. I don't know, maybe one is closer to almost a an HMO. I'm not quite sure. But my question would be is, I'm a state retiree, and one of the things that we're required to do to keep our health insurance from work, which for me is the Empire, United Healthcare, is that we have to keep the standard Medicare. If we switch to one of the other forms of Medicare, we lose our health insurance permanently. So if I'm applying for community Medicaid, but they're going to require, if it gets passed, I guess it's not enacted, if it gets passed, to switch my Medicare to whatever this other form of it is, that would make me lose my Empire Healthcare, which is a secondary.
Right.
So, do you know anything about that?
So I don't know anything about this change. Now, what I'll say is Medicaid's a very large program. And, yes, it covers things like long-term care in the event that we need chronic care and nursing home. Yes, it covers home care, home long-term care, if you know, through community Medicaid, as you mentioned. There, you know, every year around this time, there's a new budget in New York, hopefully, and we hear about different changes that may affect long-term care. I haven't heard this part that would have an impact on Medicare. But I would say it doesn't sound to me like it's maybe impacting the right piece of Medicaid. It might be a different part of Medicaid that if you are getting a different part of Medicaid, it may impact Medicare. This is the first I've heard of it. We'll certainly look into it and report back to everyone on the radio next week about it. Where did you see it? You saw it on TV?
No, online. I'm trying to think. You know how you have, not like CNN, but...
sure.
I don't remember if it's... like Yahoo News or which one. Yeah, but it's one where I usually get the clips from New York Times and
gotcha.
You know, some of the local things, and usually it's got like the video clips of whatever Biden or whoever is, you know, doing.
Yeah,
it
so
was
it kind of gives
the
you
same
a,
clip with Afghanistan, you know.
I understand. So a little bit of everything in the news feed there. So, you know, the devil's in the details. We say that every time we're on the radio. And the headlines are obviously headlines for a reason. They want you to keep going on that article. And that's a scary headline, right? You know, we don't want people to adversely impact their health insurance while they're getting their long-term care coverage in order. Typically, long-term care help has nothing to do with your health care help. They don't really intersect with one another all that much. So this would certainly be a very large intersection, specifically because it'll impact your secondary insurance you have. While you do have health insurance through your previous employment, right, your main health insurance is Medicare. I will say to you, there are people in this world who are saints because they do lots of Medicare work. And, you know, we work with a couple of them. I have a name in mind that I'd like to give you off air if you want to email me. And he could kind of fill in some of these blanks and not just tell you the deal. He could probably teach it to me and Dan as well. And if you want to email us at info@herzoglaw.com, we will absolutely email you back with his contact info so that way he could help straighten this out for you, okay?
Right, because I understand that the look-back period the deadline is now switched to, what, June 1st?
Well, but then actually, you know what, Jane? We're going to touch on that in the second half of the show because...
Oh, okay.
You probably meant July 1st, but there's hot off the presses news about how that date is now changing.
And oh, we'll there's one that. I saw for January 1st of 2022.
That's
okay.
Right. You're taking the headline from me here, Jane. Thank you very much. We are absolutely going to be bringing this up in the second half hour.
Okay.
Thanks so much for your phone call.
All right. Thank you.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
Good morning. I'm Dan Glasser.
Dan and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here in the second half of our show talking about real estate and Medicaid planning, asset protection. Just recently, we had Jane calling from Kingston about a Medicare question and some possible changes to community Medicaid. We do have a caller, Dan. and his name is Steven. He's from Schenectady, and I have a hunch that you and I may know who he is. How are you?
Hey, gentlemen. Been too long since I've seen you in person.
What's going
on, Steve?
So,
yeah, your guess as to who it is probably correct. Hey, on the radio, they have these preponderance of commercials about title lock insurance and about how thieves could use your online title to forge a quick claim deed, and then all of a sudden somebody else owns your house and you get, you know, tossed out. Dan, can you give us some insight onto what you think the real dangers are?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone comes across anything that just looks suspicious, please call. I mean, certainly you can call me or call an attorney that you know and get a second pair of eyes on it. When you purchase a piece of property, if you are getting a mortgage, you're required to get title insurance to protect the lender's interests. And the title company will not issue that policy without, you know, checking all the records, you know, with the county to make sure that the seller does, in fact, own the property. And believe it or not, I've had situations where it turns out the seller does not own what they think they own. Not a good day if that happens. And as Dave mentioned earlier in the show, you know, we've got to make sure that there's no judgments, no mortgages. Now, on top of that, the title company is required by law to offer the buyer their own insurance. It's called owner's policy of title insurance. I always recommend this to clients. The rates are set by New York State. I have no control over them. It depends on location of property, loan amount, purchase price, but on average, it's probably between $300 and $600. And when you're talking about, you know, let's just say it's a $250,000 house, that one-time fee is going to cover you for as long as you own the house against any title issues that may come up. So if there's any kind of fraud involved, you've got coverage for that. And once you get this title insurance at your closing, you don't need to do anything, you know, until for the duration of your ownership. So if something comes along in your email or in your from the post office, talking about this, you know, quick claim deed stuff, probably not legit. There are companies out there that scan clerk's records daily, and they'll send correspondence to new homeowners saying that they need certified copies of their documents, and the truth is they don't. You know, they'll say, we can get you these documents for $100. You need these, and you don't. But if you ever did need a certified copy of your deed, and I don't know why you would, but it's $5. So these are the things that I talk to clients about at closings. I show them what the document will look like when they get it so that they're not surprised. There's certainly a lot going on at the closing, and I know that some clients feel overwhelmed. So, you know, a month from now, you're going to get this piece of paper. It looks like this, and, you know, just so they don't panic when they get it. But yeah, I mean, when in doubt, call 518-465-7581. I'm extension 124.
That's a great answer. I'm just the one thing that these commercials have people thinking is that one day they're going to wake up, they're going to go out, and they're going to find, you know, deputies and a guy saying, yeah, hey, this house isn't yours. Get out. And because John Doe forged a quit claim deed signing, you know, the house you live in over to him.
Yeah, in that case,
That's not a real danger. Is that your opinion based on your experience?
Well, I mean, fraud is out there. I mean, there's people doing not so nice things out there. So that's unfortunately the world that we're in. You know, so fraud does happen. Someone could forge a deed. And that's why it's so important that you get this title insurance. If you've got lender's title insurance but you don't have owner's title insurance, not going to be a good day for you if your deed is forged. You know, you've got
but
more headaches to deal with.
Insurance, you're covered.
If you've got owner's title insurance, you're covered.
Yeah, I recommend to all my clients when they're buying a house that since the bank's going to make them get the title policy, as I understand it, it's never going to be cheaper than if you're getting it at the same time as the bank's getting theirs. So I always recommend.
There is a discount at closing. You can get, I mean, for all listeners out there, if you closed on your house 5, 10, 15 years ago, you can still get owner's title insurance.
Yep.
Yes, it may cost a few more bucks, but it's well worth it.
Yep.
Hey, Dan, so in the process of doing that, the title company isn't just going to say, hey, here's insurance. They're actually going to do the searches that are required to make sure that you, in fact, still own your home and all that stuff, too.
Oh, exactly. I mean, the process takes several weeks. You know, because of volume right now, the searches take a little bit longer. But there is someone that goes to the county clerk's office, checks all these records, and then they email me the title search. Now, the title search can be anywhere from 30 to a search I got last week was 500 pages. That's going to take a while to get through, but yeah, these that we check to make sure that, you know, title is clear at the closing.
And well, hey, you guys are doing a great job. Good show.
Thank you,
thanks
Steve.
For the call.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
You know, Dan, one of the points that Steve brought up and kind of you mentioned, so I buy a house, right? It's not coincidence that a week after I closed on that house, I have new mail to new resident that says things like, here's a book of coupons from Lowe's and Home Depot, right? If you create an LLC for a business or something, it's not a coincidence all of a sudden they're getting mail saying, hey, let us hold your corporate books, and here's a seal that you could use. Like, this is all public records. When my daughter was born, I remember very well that a week or two later, there's all sorts of, you know, Highlights magazine is coming to my house, and there's coupons for Babies R Us and this and that. It's because these public records are public. They're accessible. Right? When someone passes away, that's a public record as well. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, get a copy of your deed. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I need to have a copy of my deed. We have clients who say, can I get back that original deed? I need that original deed. It's like, well, you don't actually need it. You want it. Here you go. But the deed was recorded with the county clerk. That's what recording means. It means that I can get a certified copy of that deed. It means if I'm going to sell my house one day, they don't have to take my word for it that I own it. There's a deed filed 20 years ago that says I bought it. And to your point, can someone commit identity theft? Absolutely, that's possible, right? Do we need a certain kind of additional protection from some company that emailed us to make sure that no one can take our home? You know, I guess that's a business decision for everyone, but I don't think it's a common occurrence that we're worried about here. Some of the forms that go with a deed when it gets recorded, you know this, Dan, right? There are tax forms, right? That public record of that deed being filed, you're going to start getting mail, right, up at the residence, not issued to you, issued to some other buyer. If you're a bank, and you're going to lend money, because why would someone else do this, right? They would do it to then get a loan in your name, so that way they can get the cash, and now you're stuck with the loan bill, right? The bank is going to go through this process of making sure that the person who's borrowing the money is, in fact, the person, right? So, right. I mean, do forgeries happen? Does identity theft happen? Sure. It's a headline, and it's a scary headline, and people prey upon that scary headline to then make a quick buck because they know you're going to get some kind of thing that you may never use. That's different from title insurance, guys, because title insurance protects you if you're going to sell. I've had issues in my former life. I did real estate down in the city, Dan, condos and co-ops and so on and so forth. And there would be issues every now and then where there's this title issue. And if you had title insurance, you were all set. right? The property was even more insurable because we knew as of this date, the searches had already been done going backwards to the beginning of time. And we're good. We got a head start on that next title search. So title insurance always a really good idea. And I just wanted to clarify, when you say lender's policy, that means that the bank is concerned. They want to make sure that if there is some sort of issue, they're covered up to the amount of the loan. That's all they care about. But as we all know, loans go down as we pay them. And the owner's policy can help you with the difference between the loan and the actual value of the property. And there's also, I believe, riders for, increase in market value and so on and so right. forth. So definitely a conversation you want to have with Dan. We have about 18 minutes here. We'd love to have more callers at 518-476-5900. We'd love you to check out our webinars. We just did our webinar week, Dan. I did two of them. January did three of them. Dozens and dozens of people joined us for them. They were all at 2 p.m. If that time didn't work or you didn't know it was our webinar week, just go to our website, herzoglaw.com. Go to the seminar page. You can access videos of just about all the webinars that we do. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com, get slides for the same webinars. We're getting pretty good at them, Dan. I'm not going to lie.
You are.
Make foray into them, but it's getting. Yeah. We even know where the camera on the laptop is now, so we actually know where to look.
I haven't figured that part out yet. Yeah.
Yeah, you keep putting your thumb over the camera. It's not working, Dan. So something that Jane had brought up, and she had a Medicare question, right? But she brought up community Medicaid and this change. So let's talk about this program. And Dan, I apologize, there's not a lot of real estate involved, but at this point, you probably could talk about this yourself. You're so fluent in community Medicaid. The idea is, as we get older, we want to get care in the comfort of our own residence, whether it's an apartment or a house or a room at our kid's house or what have you. And long-term care is tough enough, right? We don't want to be in some sort of facility. And thankfully, in New York, there's a very, very good community Medicaid program, a program to help you get care at home. And historically, the best part of this program was that I could, today's April, 17th? I could get anyone who's listening likely qualified for May 1st, right? So 2 weeks from now, you can qualify. And I could be so confident in saying it, and we're so confident in saying it on the radio all the time because there's no look-back period. I just got to get rid of your money. I got to put it in a trust. I got to rearrange it. I got to move it to a spouse. I got to reconfigure as needed, and you can qualify the next month, or at least that's how it always was. One of the headlines back when the year from hell started, year 2020, was that New York was making changes to community Medicaid to enforce a look-back period for home care, meaning you couldn't just qualify the next month. Eventually, it would be you got to qualify by planning 2.5 years earlier. That sounds awful. It was still not as bad as the 5-year look-back period for qualifying for nursing home care, which is the current look-back for nursing home care. So they were going to enforce this 2.5 years. Why didn't you hear about it? Well, because of this thing called COVID, right? So no one was paying attention to it. And these rules were going to be put into effect October 1st of 2020. And New York was in no way, shape, or form ready to enforce these rules. It means it's a lot more work for the counties because now they're looking at 2.5 years of paperwork. And they said, you know what, we're going to push this to April 1st enforcement, April 1st of this past, of actually 2.5 weeks ago. So April 1st, 2021 is when they were going to put in place. They, as April approached, moved it to July 1st of this year. So we've been telling everyone on the radio, we've been telling everyone in our consultations, get qualified for, if you have the need for home care, get qualified before July 1st so that they won't look back 2.5 years. Now, hot off the presses, it's not official, but we've heard it in a couple continuing legal education webinars and then seen it in chat rooms with attorneys, is that the new date, as Gene mentioned, is going to be January 1st, 2022, meaning if you apply for community Medicaid January January 1st, 2022. If you apply on January 2nd of 2022, what does that mean? It means we're going to be looking back all the way to October 1st of 2020. Now, you're going to take out your calculator. You're going to say, that's not 2.5 years. You're right. They're going to go back to October 1st of 2020 to see how you got down to the levels that make you qualified for Medicaid. What it means for our clients is that that look-back period will only go up and up 2.5 years if the program does continue the way they're saying it will. It means that it's that much more important to create a trust to get the clocks ticking, because I don't have this free pass anymore. I can't say I never did any planning. All of a sudden, I have long-term care needs. At least I can get it at home with no look-back. Now it's even more important to get that clock ticking, because we never know when those long-term care needs are going to emerge. Okay. The other part of it, and we've been shouting this from the mountaintops, is if you, your loved one, your dad, your mom, grandma is having a tough go, we're in the long-term care conversation, activities of daily living are a problem. We're dealing with dementia, perhaps. We're dealing with physical ailments. Okay. The program is out there. If you apply for the program prior to January 1st of 2022, what the new rules suggest is that there will not be any look-back period, meaning that what I'm saying is, in fact, true. I can get anyone qualified on May 1st. On October 1st or October 30th, I can get someone qualified for November 1st, because they will not actually enforce the look-back period until January 2022. Did I make myself clear, Dan?
Crystal.
That reminds me of A Few Good Men, by the way. I don't know if you have
yes,
seen that movie.
That's where I got it.
Yeah, Crystal. In that scene, actually, I guess you're Tom Cruise and
people have sometimes mistaken me for Tom, so yes.
That's at the ophthalmologist waiting room, I assume?
No, but good guess.
Okay. So thank you, Gene, for bringing up this point, or Jane. I'm sorry if I said Gene. Really important. We're going to be hammering this over the next couple of months. It's a kind of a catch-22 here. We're hoping that they either don't enforce this rule or they continue to delay it. But the delays are because of what COVID has done to our world. So on the other side, I'm kind of thinking and hoping they don't change it, because that probably means we had a very good summer and fall when it comes to COVID and we're ready for the real world again. So be careful out there. But listen, proactivity is always the best kind of activity in our world. We want you to, not everyone needs a trust, but you need to have the conversation about whether you need the trust. There's a difference between those two things. You could be our third caller by calling 518-476-5900. Dan, I think a couple months ago when we were on the radio, I brought this up, and I always am confused about it. Maybe you can clarify. So if I'm buying a piece of property and you're selling it to me, you're going to give me a piece of paper that discloses all the defects of the property that you know about, right? And it's my understanding that if you say, you know what, Dave, figure it out for yourself, go get an inspection, I'm not going to tell you anything, you actually have to credit me money for it. And it's my understanding that if the seller is a trust or an estate, that obligation, that credit that goes with this disclosure is no longer needed. I assume it's because maybe the seller, the actual signatory for the deed, the trustee, the executor, maybe isn't in a position to know all the defects of a potential home. So can you kind of clarify that for me?
Dave, all of your understandings and assumptions right there were correct. So well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, so in New York, the seller is required to give what's called a property condition disclosure statement, which is 48 questions about the nuts and bolts of the house, how long the seller's owned it, if they're aware of any defects, any homeowners associations, things like that. And a lot of people are nervous about providing this form because they think it's going to come back to bite them after the closing, like with a lawsuit or something. So the seller does have the option to not provide this, but then they would be required to give a credit to the buyer at the closing for $500. And then for some people, that makes them sleep better at night, like not having to worry. Well, I don't know of anything that's wrong with the foundation, so I'm going to check unknown. But then if it turns out there is something, what if the buyer can prove it, and then I'm in trouble. So, but yes, when there are certain exceptions to that property condition disclosure requirement, one of them is properties coming out of an estate or a trust, because oftentimes the trustee or the administrator of an estate isn't the one living at the house, so they wouldn't have knowledge of it.
Dave, Dan, we do have another caller. We have Marge from Hudson.
Hey, Marge.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's up?
This could be a silly question, but my home is in a trust, and I'm considering at this point putting an addition on the home. Does that change that trust in any way?
No. So I think an addition is a wonderful idea. I've never been to your home, but I think it needs it. Right, Dan? Wouldn't you say the same?
I would agree.
So you remember, what you put into that trust was money. It just looks like a house. But
okay.
It's money, right?
Yes.
So you're going to make that thing that's in the trust more valuable. You're going to spend some money to put an addition on it, theoretically make it more valuable. Who cares about value? You want the space? Great. You have
okay.
some options, because typically you are going to be responsible for, you personally, repairs and improvements on the property. But if it's a capital improvement, which this would be, and if you have some money also in the trust, let's say you have $50,000 in the trust in addition to the house, if you wanted to, you could actually use the $50,000 in the trust to pay for all those things without any other documents needed, because we're taking money in the trust and we're just changing the form to be a couple extra rooms in your home.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
If you say, well, you know, I'm going to get a little loan on it, or I got some money on the side I'm going to use for this addition, great. So you're going to spend some money to make this addition. Now, let's fast forward. Let's say 4 years from now, you're on tough times, and we're talking nursing homes. God forbid. Okay. They're going to look back. They're going to say, well, hold on a second. You put this house in long, long, long ago, but you put 50 grand into this house for these improvements only 4 years ago, right? They're going to look at that as a contribution to the trust, and that contribution has its own five-year look-back period. So that's something that could be in play. That's why if there is money in the trust, you could use the money in the trust without changing the look-back period at all, because the value the trust has, money plus a house, is now no money but just a bigger house that's worth more, right? It's the same thing.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, what kind of changes are we making? I mean, we're on the radio. Might as well talk about it. What are we doing?
Well, my husband and I are getting older, of course, and the thing is that our main bedroom is upstairs. So we would like to just add on to the back of our home and put on a new master suite, things like that, so that we're not walking up and down these stairs and things.
I apologize for being so nosy, but I'm really happy I was, because you're speaking to a lot of our clients who might be in a similar position or are thinking, do I have to sell the house I love so much? If it's doable, we have a lot of people actually that do exactly what you're saying. They're going to outfit their home to age with them, and they're basically getting rid of the need to use stairs every moment of every day, or especially the first thing in the morning and last thing at night. Probably a good idea for them. So I think that's wonderful. Congrats.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
No problem. Take care.
All right. You guys have a good day now.
You too, Marge.
Bye-bye.
All right. We have about 2.5 minutes left. We have another caller. We have Mark in Albany.
Hey, Mark. Hi. Good morning. My question is, if somebody passes away with no known will or trust, and survived by, say, both parents and two minor children, what happens to all their assets, especially their home?
Good question. So first checkpoint is, do any of the assets of the person who passed away have a beneficiary or joint owner with rights of survivorship? So no. So then we say, is there a will or trust we know about? No. Okay. Depending on the county they live in, it may be worth checking the county surrogates court to see if a will was ever filed, just in case. Right. Because the answer to the question is not a very good one. Right? If there's no will, someone passes away with two minor children,
mm-hmm.
no spouse, the minor right. children are getting everything. Whatever everything is, they're getting everything.
Correct. But
they're obviously not going to, yeah. So, so there would be a guardian name for these minor children. It may be their mother, if right. mom is still alive.
Yes.
That person's in charge of the kids, at least the people, the kids. The court would appoint a guardian for the property of the kids, because now the kids own property, but they're minors.
And that couldn't be the mother.
It could be, and it likely would be, unless there's some extenuating circumstances and we're worried about her ability to manage the finances for her children. The big problem isn't, I mean, certainly that could be a problem depending on how people get along and the reasons why mom and dad aren't mom and dad anymore and they're separated. But my fear is always those minor children turning 18 years old, because then they're major children and they're in fact adults. And now we have 18-year-olds with maybe a lot of money. Could impact their financial eligibility in college. It could impact their decision-making. They can become really popular at 18 years old because they have some money. And right. so that's unfortunately what we may be facing in your fact pattern.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Dan, you know, I know we only have about 30 seconds or so. If you have minor children, if you have children who have minor children, make sure they have an estate plan. Make sure they have a will. So that way there's rules and we don't have 18-year-olds running around with a lot of money.
Agreed.
Have a good weekend.
And I do have children.
That's six of them. Have a good weekend.
You too, Dave.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.